Hey, hey, friends. Welcome back to Anti-Visions. Man, it has been a while. I dropped off the radar back in November, as I said, but I'm back. I feel like I got some things brewing and stirring to talk about. So, I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach, but I'm really glad that you're joining me. This will be fun. So, last, I guess you could call it season. It was my first season of Anti-Visions, but most of the time I spent talking about critical race theory, postmodernism, critical theory, but really got into critical race theory because that's what's impacting our society the most. And of course, the world has changed tremendously since I think my last podcast was in November, maybe even earlier than that, because I think it was even before the elections. And my, how the world has changed, has it not? It has changed dramatically. So I intend to talk more about critical race theory, but I'm not going to take the same philosophical, bent that I took last time. I spent more time explaining philosophy and a lot of background, kind of academia, language, whatever. Now I really want to look at the practice because so much has occurred and transpired really since really a year ago with the death of George Floyd during COVID, and so much happened in our country in terms of social justice and race and equity and all of these things that we talked a lot about in the last season. But also we have seen a massive increase for lack of a better term, critical race theory flooding into the schools. And a lot of it's been there, but where, we're looking at school boards voting on certain things and different kinds of trainings that are going on that are far beyond the borders of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Beyond the borders of what I would consider reasonable cultural training. Okay, so there has also been a massive pushback that has come from parents throughout the nation. You're talking from the West Coast to the East Coast, from Loudoun County and Virginia over to California. So there have been more and more parents, and not just on one side of the aisle. It's been on both. Typically it is more conservatives, but certainly not solely. Like in Loudoun County in Virginia, it's very close to Washington, D.C., and it's not just Republicans. The media will tell you it is, but it's parents that are concerned about their kids and about what their kids are being taught. And many of them do not consider themselves to be conservative or Republican, because the media would like people to believe that this is a binary problem. It's just a political issue. It's either Democrat or Republican, when it's not, and it shouldn't be. But it's a really brilliant way to scare people away so that they don't get thrown into the evil category. Because right now we're operating in the us versus them mentality, which is a dangerous mentality, especially for a society to operate in. You don't even want to train kids to think with that kind of mentality, but we're in a tribalistic sort of mentality, us versus them. And so anything that is associated with them, the other, well, that's evil, that's bad. And so it's a brilliant way if you politically or you have some kind of motivation to protect something, to paint the face of your enemy on it, right? And then to accuse anybody who comes against the thing that you really value as being part of them, And that's what's happening. So it's amazing because, like last time around, I spent a lot of time, again, talking about theory. And what I see now especially school districts have experienced a lot of pushback from parents, is that especially in the media, there's been a counterattack, and that counterattack has been especially, it's come out in many ways, but the thing that I've seen that's dominated the conversation recently is the accusation that those who oppose critical race theory in schools don't know what they're talking about. They are a bunch of, first of all, Republicans, they're conservatives, you know, sometimes they're thrown in as those crazy Trump supporters, which is all a bogus lie, even though some of them do fall in those categories. But now the counterattacks have become more specific, claiming that the opponents don't understand critical race theory. They don't know where critical race theory comes from. They basically are painted as fools and idiots who don't know what they're talking about. You'll read or listen to, you know, the news, whether it's CBS, MSNBC, ABC, they're all the same, really. They all say the same thing. They have the same talking points. As a matter of fact, one of them writes a story and everybody else writes their story based on that story, and nobody knows who the source is. That's kind of the way media works today. Journalism is indeed dead in many ways, at least in the mainstream. I wouldn't even call it mainstream media. I'd call it corporate media. So back to, I got to get off my soapbox here, but back to what I was saying is that there's this painting of others as being basically intellectually feeble and believing conspiracies, because on the one hand, the media is defending, and even school districts are defending critical race theory being taught in their schools. But then you'll also hear the argument that critical race theory is not being taught in the schools, and these conservatives are simply mistaken. They don't know what they're talking about. Critical race theory is not being taught in the schools. So I want to address this a little bit, and I'm going to do it a little differently. I'm going to take, I think oftentimes, maybe some articles or things that are said in the news, because now what I see is, what really matters is the practice. It's the implementation of critical race theory. It's not the theory. And what is happening now is the powers that be that want critical race theory to be implemented, what they're doing is they are trying to push it back to an endless theoretical debate, saying, well, you don't fully understand. You don't know who Kimberly Crenshaw is. You don't know what decade it started in. You don't know that it came from the Law Academy. You don't know what Derrick Bell really was saying. You know, and if you're interested in those kind of things, you can go back to my last season and look. I did several podcasts going in depth into all kinds of philosophical ideas like that. And I know I did at least one or two that were specifically focused on some of the main tenets, according to the original founders of critical race theory, according, you know, the main tenets that they laid out. And of course, over time, things do morph and they take on more ideas and they evolve, but it's still ultimately critical race theory. But this attempt to take those who are opposing it in practical places like schools where it's being taught, you know, to children, the attempt to turn it back into a philosophical debate and say, no, no, that's not what's happening there. They're not doing that. That's just diversity, equity, inclusion. Well, that's just training, you know, cultural sensitivity training. Well, it's not difficult to understand. I remember a year ago, James Lindsay said when there was an executive order signed by Donald Trump that government institutions could no longer use critical race theory based trainings. They could do, you know, diversity trainings. They just couldn't use any training that was based on critical race theory with certain tenets of critical race theory. And that's a really critical, important point. It's not just the name, it's the actual manifestations or teachings of it that were addressed in that executive order. And now many states have followed suit. I think there's at least 20, if not more now, that have at least proposed, if not signed, legislation saying that schools and their government institutions can't do that. Because when Biden came into office, he rescinded it. He did one of his many executive orders and got rid of that, at least at the federal level, so that now critical race theory can have its way, at least in the federal government. So what happens is they're pushing it into a place where it's a semantics game. Okay. So as I was saying, James Lindsay a year ago said when that executive order was signed, he said, hey, they're just going to change the name of it. You know, they're just going to switch it over to diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is exactly what they did. And that's why when you look at the legislation written by states throughout the country, there, like I said, there's at least 20 of them, and I have some of them posted on my website, antivisions.com. you'll see that they don't ever name critical race theory, because that's not the point. It's the name of it is not what matters. It's what's actually being taught. Certain principles, like, well, I'll give you an example. I just pulled up one that was passed in a bill that was passed in Idaho. Now, this one, you know, it's Idaho, but there are many other states. And they're very similar in their wording in what they say. And so just listen, this is, I'm not going to read the whole bill, but just a few of the things that they list that, well, I'll let it speak for itself. It says, starting on line 30, no public institution of higher education, school district, or public school, including a public charter school, shall direct or otherwise compel students to personally affirm, adopt, or adhere to any of the following tenets. One, that any sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin is inherently superior or inferior. Now stop. Okay, that sounds reasonable, doesn't it? They're not talking about critical race theory per se here. They're just talking about manifestations. So the point is simply that you need to uphold the 1964 Civil Rights Act, that no, you can't be discriminated against based on race, religion, creed. You get the picture. And you would imagine that any American would be okay with this idea. But that's one of the attacks on those who oppose critical race theory in the schools, is this claim that those people are racist, that they want to promote racism, that they don't want to deal with our racist history and our racist past. But the reality is that the manifestation of critical race theory, as I'll talk about a little bit later, the actual practice of it, who cares anymore about the theory? Who cares what Derek Bell says anymore? We know what's being taught in schools, the curriculums that are being proposed or that have been passed already, or things that teachers are saying or requiring their students to do. It's happening all throughout the country. We don't need to know what Kimberly Crenshaw thinks anymore about intersectionality. We don't need Joy Reid to tell us that Kimberly Crenshaw is not a critical race theorist, if you know what I'm, that was just the other day, which is just ridiculous, since she was one of the founders and intersectionality is integral part of critical race theory. Nonetheless, everybody should be on board with this. But the point is that, and I think that the opponents, in most of them, are on board with this, but they have, I don't know what the intentions are. There are probably lots of different people with different intentions, but nobody wants to be accused of being a racist. And that's what is happening. In the mainstream, you're just accused of being a racist because you're opposed to this and you're afraid and you want to protect white supremacy. When the reality is we're just saying, hey, don't teach anything that requires students to say that a certain sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, nationality is superior or inferior. So it sounds very anti-white supremacy, doesn't it? Anyway, that I'll go on. So there's a few other points. Actually, there's only three main ones that are on this legislation. Number two, that individuals should be adversely treated on the basis of their sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin. That's pretty straightforward. It's like the last one. They can't be coerced. They can't be expected to affirm those beliefs. Number two, they can't be treated and basically discriminated against adversely on the basis of these really immutable characteristics. Who can change their sex or race or ethnicity? Well, I guess sex is debatable these days, but who can change? Well, I guess you can change your religion too, but... You know, the point is these overall are immutable characteristics, especially the color of your skin, which is mainly what's being argued. Number three, that individuals, by virtue of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin, are inherently responsible for actions committed in the past by other members of the same sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin. So, there are a few other things. Let's see. No distinction or classification of students shall be made on account of race or color. no course of instruction or unit of study directing or otherwise compelling students to personally affirm, adopt, or adhere to any of the tenets identified in paragraph A of this subsection shall be used or introduced in any institution of higher education, any school district, or any public school, including a public charter school. That's basically, you can go and read it yourself. I'll try to remember to put the link in the notes. You can go read it. And most all of the legislation that's coming out, and it's sad that there even needs to be legislation, like I said, because there is a precedent for it based on the Civil Rights Act. And that's what Martin Luther King was fighting for, was that people would be treated based on, you know, the content of their character and not by the color of their skin, right? So that's all this is saying. It's not saying that you can't address racism. It's not saying that you can't teach slavery or the past or, you know, our history. It always, as far as I know, has been taught in public schools. So it's a lie when people are saying that we haven't taught our history. Now, it spirals. I mean, when kids are in third grade, they don't learn as in depth as they do when they're in middle school or as when they're in high school. And anyway, I don't want to go off on a bunny trail on that. But the point is that our history has been taught, and there is no effort by any conservative group or any opposition that I know of against critical race theory that is advocating for us to whitewash our history, which is what they've been claiming for a long time, saying, well, you just oppose any honest discussion. We haven't even honestly started the conversation about race in this country, which I thoroughly disagree with. There was a bloody war fought over it, Civil War. And then, yes, there was backlash after the Reconstruction, the Jim Crow, which was terrible. And that didn't represent all Americans. And there was a civil rights movement that was a really big deal that reversed a lot of that. It didn't happen overnight. And things have gradually changed over time. And really, critical race theory in many ways was born out of that dissatisfaction with the civil rights movement. But to say that we've never honestly addressed the issue is dishonest, okay? And to say that the opponents of critical race theory don't want to talk about race, or they just want a colorblind society, I don't have a problem with that term or phrase. I think, again, people get in arguments about semantics about that particular phrase in and of itself, because I don't think anybody's saying, well, pretend that nobody has, is a certain color. Again, we just get into these on and ongoing debates rather than seeking to communicate and understand what the other person is saying, even if they use a little bit of different lingo. Oftentimes, what we mean are very similar things. And so now the movement, the argument to oppose the critical race theory opposition, right? The mounting effort to protect critical race theory is to come at you and say, you don't even know what it is. And what's being taught in schools is not critical race theory. Well, fine, because we've already defined the manifestations. And if you say it doesn't manifest from critical race theory, oh, well, we're talking about the fruit here, okay? We don't want to argue anymore about it. It's just very simple. It's, you can know a tree by its fruit. And we're talking about this particular fruit is not okay. We don't have to. We can argue over the name of the tree all day long. You can call it what you call it. I can call it what I call it. The point is, we don't want to see this particular fruit in our schools and in our institutions. And ultimately, I think that there is an opportunity for these kind of things to go to the Supreme Court, and there's a really good chance they'll win. But those cases sometimes take years to get there. It could be 3 years. And in the meantime, we can't forfeit our children's education. Alrighty, now that we've got that covered, I'm going to take a brief look at an article out of the New York Post by Christopher Rufo. And I talked a little bit about him in my past podcasts, and I also post quite a bit of stuff from him on antivisions.com. He is, in many ways, one of the premier voices in opposing critical race theory, and in many ways, he really just stumbled into it because he makes documentaries. So he has made several documentaries for PBS, and most of his focus has been on poverty in cities and how to deal with the, you know, problems of poverty and housing and mental health and things like that. He's a really great guy. But somewhere along the way, he found out about some different trainings that were happening that were through the federal government. And, you know, he just kind of made it a side project. But eventually, he really began to investigate these things. And he was one of the major whistleblowers on some of the ridiculous things that were being taught to government employees. And because of his research, that was much of what inspired Donald Trump's choice to sign an executive order banning the teachings or the manifestations of critical race theory, as I was talking about. They're very similar as to what I read in the Idaho one. Maybe a few more tenets are talked about, but again, it's just about the fruit. And so most of it was based on the evidence from Christopher Rufo. Now there are many others, but I think in many ways he has become the real voice and a real lightning rod for this. So this is an article that he recently wrote because he's often, you know, he's highly published and he's also been on many news shows since all of this has gone down. And he is not afraid to get in there and debate with the best of them. Just the other day, he was on there with Joy Reid, and I've seen him with several others. I can't remember the guy's name, where he just is willing to go toe-to-toe. And this is his article about how the Washington Post had attempted to smear him. Now, many have been attempting to smear him. And so he talks about how they attacked him and how they utterly failed because they also had to retract. And that's something that happens often in our corporate media today, is that they knowingly lie about things, knowing that most people won't even read half the article and they'll believe everything they're told. And then later they can come back and write a retraction, you know, at the bottom of page 12, you know, at midnight on a Sunday evening, something that nobody will ever see or ever know. So they basically have learned that they can lie and then just clean up the mess later. And we have to realize that if a guy who in many ways he's very well versed in critical race theory and is well capable of explaining it, if he's being dragged on to shows like Joy Reid, who really her show is tanking on MSNBC. Anyway, she brought him on and she herself is trying to lecture him how he doesn't know or doesn't understand critical race theory. So if that's the case with Christopher Rufo, if they can take out the guy who carries the most ethos, you know, the most authoritative voice for critical race theory that, you know, at least publicly, other than James Lindsay maybe, and then, well, where does that put everybody else? You know, that means that everybody else is an idiot too. So this is what Rufo says in his article. He says, the fight over CRT has consumed American media. Conservatives have rallied against the toxic neo-Marxist ideology that seeks to divide the country into the racial categories of oppressor and oppressed. Liberals have defended it as a lens for understanding vague buzzwords such as systemic racism and racial equality. Well, I'm going to stop right there. Or he says racial equity. First of all, I know some are listening and have a stroke, you know, believe in systemic racism. I'm not telling you not to believe in it. I'm just saying we should be able to at least have good, robust debates and conversation, not attack people because they don't agree. And systemic racism is a very recent thing. It went overnight from nobody knew what it was to all of a sudden you're going to be smeared if you don't agree with what it is. And many people have lost their jobs over disagreeing with it or being, you know, public figures who have spoken out. And even not just here in Canada, I just listened to a professor, a renowned psychology professor in Canada, being interviewed by Jordan Peterson, who was massively attacked and censored because of and also has lost her job because of the fact that she said that Canada wasn't a systemically racist country. You know, and it's funny because here in America, we're told, well, this has to do with the legacy of slavery. Well, what does Canada have to do with the legacy of slavery? I mean, there really is something far bigger going on. That's beyond the scope of this discussion. But back to this point, what I'm saying is, I hope others will refrain from responding with the culturally conditioned reaction of the day, which is you hear one buzzword and the person says the wrong thing and we just shut down and say, oh, they're in that camp or they're in that camp. And I know many conservatives do think that there's systemic racism. But again, many of them also will respond with that culturally conditioned sort of, I'm going to shut you down because you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, maybe we need to understand each other. Maybe we're not talking about the same things. Maybe we need to have a robust debate, not do this thing where we just shut each other down. That is a culture that's been cultivated, I think, especially by our failed journalistic institutions, if you could even call them that, corporate media. I in many ways, I hold them the most responsible. And then racial equity, which who doesn't want racial equality? You know, I don't know anybody who's out there defending. I mean, maybe there's some obscure person out there somewhere. I'm not saying there aren't racists. I'm not saying that there aren't, especially like Klan guys or whatever. But they've never, at least in my lifetime, or at least since the 90s, I haven't known of any that have any real institutional power. None of them are gatekeepers. They're not, you know, at the heads of corporations. They're not the major voices. These are fringe, random people out on the fringes of society. And, you know, otherwise, people aren't sitting around going, gosh, you know, I really want to make sure that we're a racially unequal society. I want to make sure that we really can, you know, reinstitute Jim Crow. It's a ridiculous argument. And so it's really easy to just accuse your opponent of being a racist or of not caring about equality, because immediately it makes you look like, what? You mean you don't believe in critical race theory? Well, that means that you think that blacks shouldn't have the same rights as white people. Well, that's a ridiculous conclusion. Or what? You don't believe in systemic racism? Well, then you must be a racist. Wait a minute. We can debate about this. Absolutely reject racism in all forms. And if anything, I could make the argument that critical race theory is actually the one that discriminates against people and is actually more likely to produce racism, and it actually encourages racist behaviors. But just because the powers that be have that institutional power, especially in the media, to smear you as the person who's anti-racial, you know, racial equality or anti-racial reconciliation, it's ridiculous. And so the other point is that this is saying racial equity. And I'm not going to go into the word equity, but equity is not something that our Constitution ever defended. It's not something that we, a free society, really should defend. And I know that sounds offensive to many. I believe in equality. Equality of opportunity, that everybody was created equal in the eyes of God. But to have a society that pursues equity is equal outcome. And that is an extremely different thing. And I did do a podcast a while back on this. So if you're, you know, kind of offended or triggered or intrigued, then I encourage you to go back and listen to it. Because I really break down the difference between equity and equality. And I basically argue the only way you can have equity is that you take control of society. You control everything. You remove all meritocracy, any sort of competition, any sort of where somebody worked really hard and they earned something, that's all gone. And the only way you can ensure that everybody ends up in the same place is to control things. It's extremely unnatural and it's actually anti-human. You know, that might sound a little dramatic, but it's not. Equity is at the core of some of the worst atrocities of the past century. So equality is something I believe in. I do believe in equality. I just don't believe in equity. Not everybody can end up at the same place. Not everybody will. Not everybody wants to. So let's go on. So here, Christopher says, I've been on the cutting edge of this battle. My investigative reporting, including columns for this paper, has exposed CRT in education, government, and the corporate world. I've shed light on public schools forcing eight-year-olds to deconstruct their racial identities, telling white teachers they must undergo, quote-unquote, anti-racist therapy, and encouraging white parents to advocate for, quote-unquote, white abolition. These stories have attracted millions of readers, helping spark a rebellion among parents in school districts across the country and making me a target for the woke left. But the coup de grace they believed would be a 3,000-word expose in the Washington Post? The paper dispatched two reporters, Laura Meckler and Josh Dossey, and spent 3 weeks preparing a vicious hit piece against me, accusing me of a range of intellectual crimes. After the article was published, I went through it line by line and made a point-by-point rebuttal on social media and to the Washington Post's editors. Within 48 hours, the paper's story had collapsed. I'm going to stop there. Now, it might have collapsed, but all those people who read that story, the damage is already done. He doesn't address that. I mean, it is a victory here in that he was able to, you'll see, able to get them to concede to massive. They had to go back and make retractions and actually change a lot of things. He called them on it. But the point is that when someone tells a lie, it takes, I don't know, maybe it would take like 72 times of telling the truth just to undo that lie. And that's, they know what they're doing. So he says, the paper admitted to fabricating the timeline of events, having originally claimed that a Fox News appearance I made on September 1st had soon been followed by a visit by me to the Trump White House and thereafter by an anti-CRT memo from Trump's budget chief. In fact, I didn't visit the White House until October 30th, long after Team Trump issued the memo and an anti-CRT executive order. Further, the paper retracted or added 6 full paragraphs to the story and reversed its accusation that I invented the Cupertino story. The training did in fact take place, the paper conceded. Do you hear that? The paper retracted or added 6 full paragraphs to the story and reversed its accusation that he invented the Cupertino story. As for this assertion that I made false claims about the Treasury training, the paper insisted on the absurd point that the material, which told employees that virtually all white people contribute to racism, did not mean that all white people are racist. So they had a dispute over that, because when this training, and this is our federal government, the Treasury, training their employees, telling them that virtually all white people contribute to racism, but that doesn't mean that they're racist. So you're telling people, hey, if you're white, you're contributing to racism, but you yourself are not racist. It's a ridiculous argument. So one thing I'm pointing out is that the mounting, you know, backlash with critical race theory is being desperately opposed by those who want to see it implemented in schools. Call it what you want. They're not teaching critical race theory in early childhood. They're not teaching it in elementary schools. They're not teaching it in high schools. They only teach it at the grad level. Well, that's true, but they're implementing critical race theory in the schools. And there's a difference. Like, I'm an educator, and when I took pedagogy classes, which is the practice of teaching or the theory of teaching, well, then you take that pedagogy and you implement it in the schools. You implement your training, but you don't go to seventh graders or eighth graders or four-year-olds, and you don't go and tell them and try to teach them pedagogy. No, you implement the pedagogy. It's the same thing with CRT. It's a ridiculous argument to say that CRT isn't being, you know, implement in the schools by making the argument, well, it's not being taught in the schools. Right. We're not sitting down talking about Derrick Bell and law and, you know, where it all came from and all these different things, but taking all the principles and the manifestations or the conclusions drawn. So that's one thing that I'm pointing out. Another is the way that they lie and manipulate. So many people in the public don't really know what critical race theory is about, probably even those that argue against it. But many, they read the Washington Post. They believe the lie that there's a bunch of white racist people, which I can tell you right now, there are many people of all kinds of races that are actually opposing this, and all kinds of video where it's not white people that are opposing it. And, you know, but they want to present it as a bunch of white people who are just, they're just scared of losing their jobs and scared of black people excelling. And it is the biggest lie. When you look at it and you look at what they're teaching racist doctrines, and they're accusing the people who are trying to get racism out of the schools of being racist, when all we're saying is, hey, you're not allowed to discriminate against people, and you're not allowed to force your beliefs on them. In the same way that you don't get to go in schools and teach Sharia law or Islam or even Christianity for that matter, you can teach about it, but you don't get to teach it and require kids to implement it in their lives or agree with it. And that's what CRT is. It's an ideology. It's untested, it's unproven, and it's an ideology that is being forced upon people, you know, and just like the whole idea of systemic racism. You're not racist for not believing in systemic racism. It's an ideology. That's like, you know, getting in a debate about religion. It's a belief. It's ridiculous. That's not the same thing as believing in that racism actually exists. Okay, so that's another point. You know, and I know some might, I'm going to wrap it up here, but some might be wondering, well, what kind of things? You know, I mentioned some of the fruit, and I have lots posted on my website. I post regularly, just articles, curated news, kind of things that are of interest to me that are on a wide range of things, not just CRT, but a lot of it is CRT, especially as related to education, because this is where the rubber is meeting the road. And at this point, I'm not as interested in theory and having a debate about the philosophy of it as I am looking at this. Like, let's see, the original, I'm just going to list off, these are very short summaries of things that Christopher Rufo uncovered in his investigations that eventually contributed to legislation. So this is having to do with government. So he found that the Treasury Department told employees that all white people are racist and that children become racist by 3 months old. And I might add that it's specifically white 3-month-old racists. There's actually a lot more, and I can post this, and then he has a link to the article. There's a lot more. These are just headlines. A Department of Education-funded conference advocated for abolition of American institutions. That in itself is incomprehensible, because it is an American institution advocating for the abolition of American institutions. And it told whites that they must give up their wealth. Okay, so another one, the National Credit Union, and you know, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't be allowed to believe those things or even argue those things. What I am saying is that the federal government should not be allowed to implement those things and force nobody, not even a private institution or business has any business getting into the head of people. It's like saying, you know, you have to believe, like I said, you have to believe this about Islam to work at our company. And if not, you know, we won't hire you. So what I'm saying is it just shouldn't be in the schools, and it shouldn't be in government institutions. The National Credit Union Administration told employees America was founded on white supremacy. The Department of Homeland Security told its white employees that they have been socialized into oppressor roles. Now, this also is because they segregated their employees, and they would have these white trainings. And I'm like, wow, you know, last time we saw, and you even see pictures where it's like, you know, the sign for the whites to go in this room and the blacks. And it's ironic because they don't realize the last time those kind of signs were up was really during Jim Crow, right? You know, it was like, this is the door for the whites. This is the door for the blacks. This is a fountain for the whites. This is a fountain. Isn't it ironic, right? In the name of equity, we're going to segregate again. We're in the name of equity. We're going to be separate but equal. So the CDC hosted a 13-week training program, 13 weeks of training, declaring that racism is a public health crisis and denounced the U.S. as a nation of white supremacist ideology. The State Department, the EPA, and the VA pressured staff to denounce their white privilege, become co-resistors against systemic racism, and sign equity pledges. And now here's a few in schools. Seattle Public Schools told teachers that the education system is guilty of spirit murder against black children and that white teachers must bankrupt their privilege in acknowledgement of their thieved inheritance. San Diego Public Schools accused white teachers of being colonizers on stolen Native American land and told them, "You are racist, and you are upholding racist ideas, structures, and policies." They recommended that the teachers undergo anti-racist therapy. So, it's just astounding to me that there are these arguments about critical race theory, defending critical race theory, and what really matters is what's being said, not the theory, not who invented it, but what's being said and what's being done. When you have employees that you're manipulating and you're accusing them of something that people did a long time ago in relationship to the Native Americans and blaming them, but most of the people there probably immigrated through their families much later than when these, you know, early colonizers dealt with Native Americans. I mean, truly, there are many people weren't even here when there were slaves. Many of their families weren't even here. So there's that idea of holding people guilty because of their racial identity. They're no longer treated based on their character or their merit or who they are as an individual or even their behavior. It's simply because you happen to have these immutable characteristics like the color of your skin and you're in this particular country and we're going to manipulate you. And, you know, it puts them in a position where if they speak out against it, many of them get fired or they get put on a list where they need to undergo more training. And, you know, it starts the paper trail of getting them out the door because they're made to look like racists. So it's very coercive. A Cupertino, California elementary school forced third graders, to deconstruct their racial and sexual identities, then rank themselves according to their power and privilege. They separated the 8-year-old children into oppressors and oppressed. That's fruit, friends, and it's not okay. It's not okay any day of the week. Whatever you call it, whatever you don't call it, that particular behavior is not okay. A middle school in Springfield, Missouri forced teachers to locate themselves on an oppression matrix, claiming that white heterosexual Protestant males are inherently oppressors and must atone for their covert white supremacy. Man, it sounds like a religion or something, you know, must atone. We'll bring the priest in and he's going to throw the social justice holy water on you. I mean, come on. This is, where are we? We're taking galactic leaps backwards. A Philadelphia elementary school forced fifth graders to celebrate black communism and simulated a black power rally to free Angela Davis from prison. If you don't know who that is, just look it up. It's pretty appalling. So at this school, 87% of students will fail to achieve basic literacy by graduation. That is the case of many. There are just so many more cases here that I could go on. But that is the deal. You're talking about 87% of students will fail to achieve basic literacy, which means that a high percentage of them are destined for incarceration. And here we are trying to teach them how to be social justice warriors. You've got to be kidding me. It is a massive disservice to these kids. And in many ways, it sounds like a great diversion from the fact that these educators are absolutely failing in their jobs. They need to be focused on teaching academics to the kids and teaching the kids how to think, not what to think. Teachers are not to be indoctrinating kids and forcing them to think certain ways. They're supposed to be introducing them to truth and knowledge, really ideas and how to evaluate those ideas and come to their own conclusions. Okay, so I'm going to stop there. I'm excited. Obviously, I'm all fired up and I just shot all over the place there. But I do intend to bring some art news articles here and there, discuss some different issues as it relates to critical race theory in its manifestations like this, some of the things that are actually happening on the ground, and also, you know, how this plays in with media censorship and just the overall idea of freedom of speech. So I really am excited to be back. Appreciate you joining me, and I will see you guys next time.